Well, good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here we are, just about a year after the attack on candidate Trump. Fortunately, an unsuccessful assassination attempt. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. And we have some other news, a little bit about Joe Biden's doctor, White House doctor, pleads the Fifth Amendment. Allegedly on his part, because he didn't want to give up patient confidentiality information. But who can say? A little bit about some autoimmune diseases connected to the COVID vaccine. Possible next pandemic. Rare rodent disease. And as we have mentioned in the past, China has been buying up a lot of land, farmland and land near important military bases. So the USA is finally doing something about that. And then we have a number of things pertaining to the assassination attempt on President Trump. Well, if you'd like to contact me, you can reach me by writing to the Divided Kingdom, or you can write to me, Lou Cavalli, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like that famous Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And check out our website. I'm hoping to update it with some new essays soon. But if you need to find out some other venues to hear in case the shortwave is a little shaky and you have been rely upon that, you can find us in other venues as well. Just go to our website. In this case, sad to say that my wife is no longer with us. It's now just my website, the Divided, leave off the words off. Just put DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Well, let's begin now with a very recent article, appeared on July 9th, 2025, in the Washington Times. Former White House doctor pleads for the Fifth in House probe of Biden's cognitive decline. Now, I don't think it takes a great deal of imagination to realize that President Biden, sad to say, was in serious mental decline during the last part of his presidency. In fact, he may not have been that good mentally in the first part of his presidency, but certainly any honest person, unbiased person, could see, listening to him and seeing how he reacted and his confusion, that the poor man was not what he once was. So, this article is by Mallory Wilson and Susan Correggio, and it says, former White House physician Dr. Kevin O'Connor refused to answer questions from House lawmakers investigating the alleged cover-up of President Biden's cognitive decline, asserting his right under the Fifth Amendment to avoid self-incrimination. Dr. O'Connor made a quick exit from a House office building Tuesday, after appearing behind closed doors for what was supposed to be a transcribed interview with the White House, that is to say the House, meaning the House of Representatives, Oversight and Government Reform Committee. He was subpoenaed to appear as part of the House probe into Biden aides who were accused of covering up his cognitive decline while in office and possibly acting on his behalf using the presidential auto pen. And as I was driving today, I was listening to the audio of the Fox News station. I can get the audio in my automobile. And President Trump himself was saying that it seemed to him quite clear-cut that the auto pen was used by President Biden for important matters that should have been hand-signed, not auto pen signed. President Trump said the auto pen was intended for things like if a child writes to the president wants to commend the child for his interest. And, you know, President Trump was saying there are literally thousands of those coming in every day. And there was just enough minutes in the day for the president to sign with his live signature all of those. That's where the auto pen would be used. But for major matters like pardons for criminals, the auto pen wasn't intended for that. Now, going on with this, Dr. O'Connor's lawyers said he asserted his Fifth Amendment right and the need to protect patient confidentiality. Before the House subpoena, Dr. O'Connor had refused to appear, also citing patient confidentiality. In Wednesday's brief interview, lawmakers asked just two questions of the physician. Was he ever told to lie about the president? And did he believe Mr. Biden was unfit to execute his duties as president? To both questions, Dr. O'Connor pleaded the fifth, according to sources familiar with the proceeding. And the Oversight Committee Chairman, James Comer of Kentucky, said, quote, "This is unprecedented, and I think that this adds more fuel to the fire that there was a cover-up," unquote. A source familiar with the proceedings told the Washington Times that Dr. O'Connor would not answer any questions other than his name and would not respond to questions that did not involve patient confidentiality. In other words, that wasn't his sole excuse. Some of the questions that he refused to answer apparently had nothing to do with patient confidentiality. The GOP-led panel is in the process of interviewing more than a dozen former top Biden staffers over allegations they hid Mr. Biden's mental decline and acted on his behalf. Among them are a group of aides who were described as the, quote, Politburo, unquote, in a recent tell-all book. And this is a quote, "Five people were running the country, and Joe Biden was at best a senior member of the board," one former aide told the authors of the book Original Sin, a bombshell book about Mr. Biden's cognitive decline. Dr. O'Connor wrote glowing health reports during Dr. Biden's presidency, despite signs of diminishing mental acuity and numerous public episodes in which Mr. Biden lost his train of thought when speaking or appeared to wander off at events. His doctor did not order any cognitive tests, according to records made public about Mr. Biden's health during his presidency. The physician was a close family friend and also a business associate to Mr. Biden's younger brother, James Biden, helping him in a bid to win contracts from the Department of Veterans Affairs in 2017. And Mr. Comer wrote earlier this year in a letter summoning Dr. O'Connor to testify, quote, "Your connections with the Biden family, the committee seeks to understand, or given your connections with the Biden family, the committee seeks to understand if you contributed to an effort to hide former President Biden's fitness to serve the American people," unquote. The Trump administration waived executive privilege, which would have shielded Dr. O'Connor from discussing his treatment of Mr. Biden. And then it goes on about one of the Democrats defending the doctor. Representative Jasmine Crockett, the Texas Democrat, member of the Oversight Panel, said, quote, "I think that he," meaning the doctor, "did what any good lawyer would advise him to do, and it seems like he had two good lawyers in the room today." And jumping down now, later this month, the Oversight Panel will interview Ron Klain, who served as Mr. Biden's White House Chief of Staff, and Mike Donilon, a veteran campaign operative and a long-term advisor to Mr. Biden, among others. Lawmakers are investigating the use of the auto pen to sign thousands of executive orders, pardons, and other documents on behalf of Mr. Biden. The mechanical signature was used frequently even when Mr. Biden was in the White House and could have signed documents himself. Use of the auto pen exploded during the second half of 2022, when Mr. Biden's cognitive decline became increasingly apparent, investigators for the Washington-based Oversight Project found. Last month, lawmakers interviewed Neera Tanden, who served as staff secretary in the Biden White House. She was authorized in her role to direct the use of the auto pen. She testified that she had, quote, minimal interaction, unquote, with Mr. Biden regarding the mechanical signature, but said she followed a protocol passed down from previous administrations for receiving approval for its use from Mr. Biden's top aides. As DeVates tried to hide the former president's cognitive decline, she said, absolutely not. Well, I'm going to skip the rest of that in the interest of time. But again, if you'd like to see that, it appeared in the Washington Times, Wednesday, January 9th, 2015. And the title said, former White House doctor pleads the fifth, etc. All right. Now, got a couple of health things. First, some Slate news, spike in rapid-onset autoimmune rheumatic diseases caused by COVID, quote-unquote, vaccines, a study warns. This is by Frank Bergman. This one appeared July 9th, 2025. And it says, a major new study has just delivered another crushing blow to the crumbling narrative that COVID vaccines are universally safe and effective. And, of course, vaccines is in quotes because they're not really vaccines. And safe and effective is in quotes because that's what the makers of the vaccine claimed they were. And it now seems that they were not safe, nor were they effective. The peer-reviewed study has confirmed that the injections are triggering new onset autoimmune rheumatic diseases, ARDs, in previously healthy people. This study was led by Dr. A. Kabasi Oskoui. I hope that's pronounced right. I'll spell it Oskoui. And Dr. S. Tasini Tekantapa, Tekantapeh, of the Connective Tissue Diseases Research Center at Tabriz University of Medical Sciences in Iran. The results of the study were published in the medical journal Annals of the Rheumatic Diseases. The findings add to the growing list of harms that many doctors, whistleblowers, and vaccine-injured patients have been warning about since 2021. The study confirms that the experimental COVID shots are triggering rapid-onset ARDs, and again, that was short for autoimmune rheumatic diseases, in previously healthy adults, especially in those with underlying genetic or immune vulnerabilities. In one of the most comprehensive analyses of its kind, the researchers followed PRISMA guidelines, and I think that's a medical organization, PRISMA, P-R-I-S-M-A, guidelines, to systematically comb through medical literature from 2020 through September 2024. The researchers sought to identify case reports of autoimmune rheumatic disorders emerging within 30 days of COVID vaccination in individuals with no prior history of such diseases. After filtering through 715 articles, they confirmed 372 verified cases of post-vaccine autoimmune rheumatic diseases. These were not mild or ambiguous reactions, however. They included vasculitis, connective tissue diseases, inflammatory arthritis, and more. In the study's paper, the researchers reveal that disturbing patterns began to emerge. Nearly 9 in 10 cases, 87%, occurred within 2 weeks of receiving a COVID injection. The median was just 7 days between injection and disease onset. Women were hardest hit, making up 63% of the cases, and the average age was 55. The majority of injuries followed the first or second dose, the exact shots marketed as, quote, necessary for full protection, unquote. mRNA vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, were implicated in 2/3, 67% of all cases. And I'm going to jump down now. The rapid onset of disease, the timing post-injection, and the overwhelming majority tied to mRNA products are red flags that demand urgent attention. Yet despite the mounting scientific evidence, Global health authorities have continued to push these shots, especially in populations with little to no COVID risk, like children and young adults. And while the researchers admit that their study has limitations, including a lack of denominator data and control groups, the evidence still points to a clear clinical pattern to prove that the shots are triggering autoimmunity in healthy people. This study adds to a growing body of scientific literature and firsthand clinical reports confirming serious, often life-altering post-vaccine autoimmune conditions. Yet, major media outlets remain silent. Instead, it's left to independent researchers, citizen journalists, and health freedom advocates to sound the alarm. There's a little bit more, but I'm going to stop there. Again, this is from Slate News. Spike in rapid onset autoimmune rheumatic diseases caused by COVID vaccines, study warns. July 9th, 2025. And one other shorter article appeared in the People's Voice. Experts warn that rare rodent disease could be the next pandemic. July 10th, 2025, by Neam Harris. This week, health officials confirmed that an employee at Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona had been exposed to hantavirus. This is a respiratory illness that spreads by inhaling airborne particles released by rodent droppings. Wonder if there's a vaccination in the pipeline? The Mail Online reports the disease, which killed Gene Hackman's wife, Betsy Arakawa, is so rare in the U.S. that only one or two people die every year, and there have only been around 1,000 cases in the past three decades. These cases are mostly among farmers, hikers, and campers, and homeless populations. However, the virus has now been detected in five Arizona residents and four people in Nevada this year alone, suggesting cases could be on the rise. In 2024, there were seven confirmed cases and four deaths. The unnamed employee was reportedly exposed to hantavirus while working in the camp's mule pens, according to a Grand Canyon spokesperson. And earlier this year, three people in remote Mammoth Lakes, California, died of hantavirus, despite not being engaged in activities typically associated with exposure, according to state health officials. Though the park employee is expected to make a full recovery, hantavirus can lead to hantavirus pneumonary syndrome, HPS, which causes the lungs to fill with fluid and kills up to 50% of patients. To reduce risks of exposure, health officials recommend airing out spaces where mice droppings could be, avoid sweeping droppings, use disinfectant, and wipe up debris and wear gloves and a mask. The disease was first identified in South Korea in 1978 when researchers isolated it from a field mouse. However, it only affects about 40 to 50 Americans each year, mostly in the Southwest. Between 1993 and 2022, 864 cases have been confirmed. The latest available CDC data shows. Worldwide, there are about 150,000 to 200,000 cases per year, most of which are in China. The rarity of hantavirus in the U.S. is partly because the country has fewer rodent species that the illness can circulate amongst, compared to Asia and Europe, where multiple rodent species act as hosts. In the U.S., deer mice are the most common carriers. David Quammen, Q-U-A-M-M-E-N, a science writer whose book predicted the COVID-19 pandemic, previously told DailyMail.com an increase in hantavirus cases could have global implications. David Brahman said, quote, hantaviruses were known from Korea originally, then they turned up in the Four Corners area of the U.S. That would be, if my geography is right, where New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, and Utah meet. So those cases turned up in that Four Corners region of the U.S. back in 1992, and they started killing people. And he goes on to say, it was not surprising to find hantavirus in the U.S. as well as in Korea, because, again, it's a global group of viruses. Okay, something to watch out for. That, again, was from the People's Voice. Experts warn that rare rodent disease could be the next pandemic. July 10th, 2025. Now, we have from time to time in this program talked about China buying up land. This is a disturbing trend. A lot of good farmland is being bought up by Chinese nationals, supposedly because they want to have good farms. But do we really believe all that, especially when some of them have been buying up land near military bases? So this appeared in Fox News, July 10th, 2025, by Jeremy Hunt. And the title, Trump is taking the fight to the CCP. And, of course, that's the Chinese Communist Party. It's long past time we protected our bases and critical infrastructure. This week, U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Burke Rollins announced a nationwide ban on farmland sales to Chinese nationals and other foreign adversaries. At the same joint press conference, Defense Secretary Hegseth added that the Department of Defense would work specifically to restrict the sale of other properties near American military bases. As a former Army intelligence captain, this week's announcement doesn't just bring welcome news, it delivers a sigh of relief. After 4 years of weakness under the Biden administration, we finally have a commander-in-chief who isn't afraid to confront the Chinese Communist Party's dangerous moves on American soil. In recent years, Chinese nationals expanded their ownership of U.S. land to 265,000 acres. Even worse, Chinese entities have strategically purchased properties near 19 key military installations, including Fort Bragg and Fort Hood. They've also bought control of key industries vital to our food supply lines. In fact, China now controls the import of 70% of crop protection products that our farmers rely on to grow their crops. You don't need to be an intelligence expert to see the inherent national security vulnerability that arises if we surrender key American industries to Chinese-backed companies. Fortunately, several states like Georgia, Florida, and Texas have already stepped up to ban foreign land purchases, especially near military bases within their states. Now the Trump administration is taking the fight nationally. Officials are cracking down on acquisitions across the country and taking the decisive steps needed to protect both our military infrastructure and the American food supply. These concerns are not just hypothetical. They're playing out in alarming ways. Take, for example, the CEO of TP-Link, a Chinese state-sponsored networking company currently under intense federal scrutiny. Jianjun Zhao, a Chinese national, acquired at least two significant agricultural land parcels in California's Silicon Valley and neighboring Monterey County. This is the same company whose Wi-Fi routers were the subject of a congressional hearing earlier this year, during which a member of Congress warned America not to use their routers and exposed how Chinese state-backed hackers use devices like TP-Link's to pre-position for potential cyber attacks on America's critical infrastructure, our power grids, water systems, telecommunications networks, and more. Today, TP-Link controls a staggering 65% of the U.S. home and small business router market, allegedly achieved through predatory pricing. Now, with Zhao's land purchases, we may be witnessing a troubling pattern strategic acquisitions by Chinese nationals tied to entities under intense national security scrutiny in regions of high infrastructure and economic sensitivity. This is exactly the type of threat the Trump administration's new policies are designed to address before it's too late. Make no mistake, President Trump isn't just taking action against foreign ownership in the agriculture industry. He's also addressing threats posed by TP-Link and on. Not only has the Trump administration launched a criminal antitrust investigation against TP-Link for alleged predatory practicing or pricing, enabling it to dominate the U.S. Wi-Fi market, but the administration is also considering banning TP-Link sales in the U.S. altogether as early as this calendar year, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, a critically important step toward improving our national security posture. And I'm going to skip down a little bit. Make no mistake, the CCP threat remains high. Their spies are persistent, their hackers sophisticated, and their land purchases calculated. That's why we must continue investigating and counterintelligence, investing in counterintelligence, bolstering our cybersecurity, and blocking foreign ownership of strategic assets. President Trump's leadership and decisiveness is breathing new life into a long-running push by the national security community to counter this threat from the CCP. We must demand vigilance, support policies that prioritize our security, and reject the complacency of the past. The Chinese threat is real, and with new leadership in the White House, we are finally fighting back. And at the bottom, it says, a little comment here, Jeremy Hunt, the author of this article, is a West Point graduate, served as a U.S. Army intelligence captain, and he's now a media fellow at Hudson Institute and chairman of Veterans on Duty, a nonprofit organization focused on national security. You can follow him on X at the Jeremy Hunt. Again, this was on Fox News, July 10th. 2025. Trump is taking the fight to the CCP. Well, this past Sunday was the one-year anniversary. I'm sure you heard a great deal about it on the news media. If you watched any TV at all, I heard I made a trip over to the Washington, D.C. area, about a 100-mile round. Take that back, about a 200-mile round trip, so I had plenty of time to listen to the news. And there was a great deal of coverage, of course, as often is when it's the anniversary of some major event. Now, I wanted to lead this off with a little quick thing, jumping back 62 years, almost 62 years. And get my second phone here. This appeared in the Washington Post, Monday, July 14, 2025. The CIA reveals more of its connections to Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay, what's that got to do with this? What's that got to do with Donald Trump? Well, let's read just a little bit. I won't go into this in great length, but it says, new documents show an officer known only as Howard managed a Cuban group that interacted with Oswald in the months before the JFK assassination. For more than 60 years, the CIA claimed it had little or no knowledge of Lee Harvey Oswald's activities before the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in November 1963. That wasn't true. New documents unearthed by a House task force prove. The revelation raises further questions about the agency's awareness of our involvement in the plot to murder the president. And it goes on with a couple of things I believe I might have mentioned the last time. It was a CIA officer, George Joannides, I think you pronounce it, J-O-A-N-N-I-D-E-S, based in Miami in 1963. And he was helping finance and oversee a group of Cuban students opposed to the ascension of Fidel Castro. down a little bit. That CIA-backed group, known as DRE, from its Spanish initials, was aware of Oswald as he publicly promoted a pro-caster policy of the U.S., and its members physically clashed with him 3 months before the assassination. The CIA had long denied any involvement with the Cuban group. After the most recent release of documents, the agency did not respond to a request for comment. Okay, I brought that up because it just goes to show that for 60, what will be this November 22nd, 62 years, the CIA has said, oh, we had nothing to do with anybody connected with Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, as you heard, if you listened to this program before, I don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I'm not at all sure that he even fired the shots. It may have been just what he said he was, a patsy. But the point of this is, can you believe government organizations? Could you believe them then? No. Can you believe them today? I doubt it. So that leads us up to the present, to this attempted assassination of President, then candidate, Donald Trump. We'll begin with a little quick summary, although I think most of us are pretty much familiar with this, but there might be a few little details that are worth repeating. This was on Fox News, July 10th, 2025. Secret Service suspends six agents tasked with protecting Trump during July 2024 assassination attempt. Secret Service Deputy Director Matt Quinn said during an interview that the agents' disciplinary actions ranged from 10 to 42 days of leave with no pay or benefits. Again, this was July 10th, and it was by Elizabeth Pritchett, P-R-I-T-C-H-E-T-T, Fox News. Kari Comparatore's widow, Helen, sits down with Fox News correspondent Alexis McAdams. Six Secret Service agents were suspended without pay or benefits following a gunman's attempt to take President Donald Trump's life at a Pennsylvania rally last July. Matt Quinn, the agency's deputy director, told CBS News on Wednesday that they, quote, weren't going to fire their way out of this. Curious choice of words. That's me, Blue speaking. But he did say they are, quote, laser-focused on fixing the root cause of the problem, unquote. Quinn told the outlet that the agent's penalty ranged from 10 to 42 days of unpaid leave, adding that they were placed in restricted roles with less responsibility once they returned to the job. He said the disciplinary actions were in accordance with a federally mandated process. Fox News Digital reached out to the Secret Service for independent confirmation, but did not hear back by the time of publication. The agency faced heavy criticism following the security failure, which allowed gunman Thomas Crooks to open fire toward the rally stage in Butler, Pennsylvania, on July 13, 2024. Corey Comparatore, a 50-year-old firefighter, father, and husband attending the rally, was killed, while Trump's ear was grazed by a bullet, and two other men were injured by gunfire. Crooks was killed by a Secret Service sniper. Quinn said to CBS, quote, Secret Service is totally accountable for Butler. Butler was an operational failure, and we are focused today on ensuring that it never happens again, unquote. And this is Lou speaking. It seems to me we heard similar things, those of us that were alive at the time, or have read those things if we weren't alive at the time, but read them later, about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I remember very well being shocked when I read that the night before the fatal motorcade, several of the Secret Service agents who were going to be on duty at, I think, 8 o'clock the next morning, maybe 9 o'clock, were at a bar in the middle of the night. I think some of them didn't leave till almost 5 o'clock in the morning. And if you look at a very famous photograph that takes place just as the assassination is beginning, You can see the president if you look very closely. This is a photograph by James Altkins. I can't remember if he was from the Associated Press or one of the Dallas newspapers, but it shows the front of the presidential limousine, and you can see the president's arms coming up. He's reacting to that first shot, not yet the fatal shot. And in the car behind, the Secret Service follow-up car, the Secret Service agents are all looking back. Apparently, they've heard a shot. They seem to think that the shot came from the Texas School Depository, which was slightly to the back end. It would have been the right rear, if you're looking forward, of the presidential limousine. And the sad fact is, the Secret Service agents are not jumping off to run up to protect the president, with the one exception, Clint Hill. He did run and tried to shield the president, but he was too late. By the time he could get to the limousine, which was going very slowly, it was too late. He probably saved Jacqueline Kennedy's life by pushing it back onto the seat. She had, for reasons that have never been quite clear, even to herself, jumped up on the hood of, not the hood, the trunk of the car. Clint Hill pushed her back in. But by the time he got there, the president had been mortally wounded. Now, why do I bring this up? Because we have the same kind of lack of reaction and preventive measures here. Here it is 62 years later. Long time. Six decades and more. So now we move to Fox News by Diana Stancy. Butler, 1 year later, revisiting the historic assassination attempt against Donald Trump. And the president, who was then a candidate, recalled, quote, "It was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on," unquote. Presidential candidate Donald Trump took the stage at a routine campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, exactly a year ago, July 13, 2024. One of hundreds of rallies he'd appeared at since announcing his first presidential campaign in 2015. But this rally turned out unlike any other of his career. As Trump stood at the podium, with supporters holding signs that said, "Joe Biden, you're fired," directly behind him, the president pointed to a chart detailing how illegal immigration numbers at the end of his first term, pointing to a chart detailing low illegal immigration numbers at the end of his first term and how they'd risen under the Biden administration. Trump said, quote, "That chart's a couple of months old, and if you want to really see something that's sad, take a look at what happened." And Trump said that and halted at the sound of gunshots piercing the air. Moments later, Trump ducked, and Secret Service agents rushed to his side. More gunshots followed, and attendees fearfully screamed while Trump remained covered, waiting for the all-clear sign. Once given the green light, Secret Service personnel rose alongside Trump to escort him from the stage. But Trump didn't hide himself from his supporters. Instead, he emerged from the huddle, raised his fist high in the air, and said, "Fight," three times, prompting the audience to erupt and chant USA as he exited. Ultimately, 20-year-old gunman Thomas Matthew Crooks fired 8 bullets at Trump from a rooftop during the rally, with a bullet grazing Trump's ear. The gunman also killed Corey Comparatore, a 50-year-old firefighter, father, and husband attending the rally, and injured 2 others. A Secret Service sniper killed Crooks during the shooting, and an FBI investigation remains in progress. No motive has been determined for why Crooks conducted the attack. And yesterday, listening on the news, or a couple days ago, listening on the news, one of the things brought out by some of the commentators was, we know very, very little, even a year later, about this Thomas Matthew Crooks or his family. It's all seems to have been shunted aside, for lack of a better word. It says classmates of Crooks have described him as a loner, subjected to bullying, and the FBI told reporters in August 2024 that Crooks likely suffered from an undiagnosed disorder. Well, maybe so. Is that all they can tell us about him? And Trump said during an exclusive interview clip that aired Thursday, it was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got a whack. People were screaming, and I got down quickly, fortunately, because I think they shot 8 bullets, unquote. Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, who then served as Trump's campaign co-chair, said she initially believed Trump had been killed. You think the worst, Wiles said in an interview that dropped Wednesday with Miranda Devine on Pod Force One. This is again in quotes, you cannot. It's human. You can't think otherwise. And when he stood up, I thought, oh my gosh, unquote. Wiles recounted that due to the immigration chart, Trump had just moved his head slightly at the time of the ambush. A key adjustment in Trump's posture, posture as Crooks started to fire at him. But it was a scary time, and I think this is still a quote from Susie Wiles. But it was a scary time, and it changed everything for us. The security became front and center, which it hadn't been before. Unquote. The attack led to an overhaul of the Secret Service in the past year to prevent another attack like the one in Pennsylvania. The Department of Homeland Security issued a report in October 2024, which determined that if the Secret Service didn't enact reforms, another episode like the one in Pennsylvania was possible. The report said, quote, the Secret Service does not perform at the elite levels needed to discharge its critical mission. The Secret Service has become bureaucratic, complacent, and static. Even though risks have multiplied, the technology has evolved, unquote. And it mentions they've ushered in some reforms and security measures. As said before, they'd suspended 6 of the agents. Let me jump down a little bit. And Mr. Trump said at the Republican convention, quote, many people say it was a providential moment. Probably was. When I rose, surrounded by Secret Service, the crowd was confused because they thought I was dead. And there was great, great sorrow. I could see that on their faces. As I looked out, they didn't know I was looking out. They thought it was over. But I could see it. I wanted to do something to let them know I was okay. I raised my right arm, looked at the thousands and thousands of people that were breathlessly waiting, and started shouting, fight, 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 unquote. Today, a painting depicting Trump's fist raised with blood smeared across his face stands in the White House entrance hall. Again, that was from Fox News, July 13th, 2025. Butler, 1 year later. Now, one of the things that's coming up is the preparations for this Butler rally. That is the Secret Service preparations. Here's something, this time from CBS News, dated July 13th, or updated at least, July 13th, 2025. Again, CBS News by Faris Tanyos, T-A-N-Y-O-S. And the title says, before Butler shooting, Secret Service denied multiple requests to bolster Trump's security detail during his 2024 campaign, report says. And this is Lou speaking. I'm not always too keen on these major networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, and CNN, and so forth. They tend to be very critical of Trump and unsympathetic. But this is a pretty good overall summary of what happened. So I read portions of it. Ahead of the assassination attempt 1 year ago on President Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, the U.S. Secret Service denied multiple requests from Mr. Trump's Secret Service detail to bolster his security apparatus during his 2024 presidential campaign, according to a Senate report released Sunday. And I believe they're talking about Sunday, July 13th, that very day that the article was written. The report from the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs found that the Security Service, make that the Secret Service, quote, denied or left unfulfilled at least 10 requests, unquote, from Mr. Trump's detail for additional resources, including an enhanced counter-drone system, counter-assault team personnel, and counter-snipers. In an interview on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, called the Secret Service's reaction to the shootings a, quote, cascade of errors. Rand Paul said he believed there is a cultural cover-up, those are his words, cultural cover-up within the Secret Service, and said he believed that there would not have been any discipline within the agency if he hadn't subpoenaed their records. And I should interrupt here and just mention, there was no discipline that I'm aware of among the Secret Service at the time of President Kennedy's assassination, even though some of those agents had been out against agency policy at that drinking establishment, that bar, or whatever you call it, called the Cellar, early in the hours of the morning of the assassination. And their reactions surely were affected by that. If not because of drinking, then at least because of the lack of sleep. But now going back to Rand Paul's words, this report reveals a disturbing pattern of communication failures and negligence that culminated in a preventable tragedy. Ron Paul, who chairs the Senate Homeland Security Committee, wrote in the report. He went on, what happened was inexcusable, and the consequences imposed for the failures so far do not reflect the severity of the situation, unquote. The report accuses then Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheedy, I believe you pronounce it, of falsely, that's in quotes, that's the very word in the report, falsely testifying to Congress that, quote, no U.S. Secret Service asset requests were denied by the Butler rally, unquote. Cheedy resigned nearly a year ago after testifying before Congress. In response to the report, Cheedy said in a statement that while she agrees that, quote, mistakes were made and reform is needed, unquote, she said, quote, that fateful day was a perfect storm of events, unquote. And she goes on to say that at the time she gave her congressional testimony, 10 days after the assassination, she had been provided information that led her to believe that there were no requests for additional support from the Trump team. And I'm condensing this a little bit now. Richard Giudita, G-I-U-D-I-T-T-A, Jr., chief counsel of the Secret Service, told the committee that there was no evidence that political animus was behind the denials, the report reads. Specifically concerning the Butler rally, the committee did not find that there was an explicit denial, and those are the committee's words, explicit denial for enhanced counter-drone systems. However, in a transcribed interview to the committee, a Secret Service counter-unmanned aircraft systems agent alleged that such a request was denied via phone by a Secret Service Technical Security Division advanced agent, the report states. That denial was corroborated by Secret Service documents, the report found. This would appear to contradict previous testimony from then Secret Service Acting Director Ronald Rowe, who had replaced Cheedy in the post. During a contentious July 30th, 2024 hearing before the Senate Homeland Security and Judiciary Committee, Rowe testified that, quote, all assets requested were approved, unquote, for the Butler rally. Rowe, however, also testified regarding requests for assets other than Butler, quote, there are times when assets were unavailable and not able to be filled, and those gaps were staffed with state and local law enforcement tactical assets, unquote. Furthermore, the new report found that prior to the Butler shooting, the Secret Service had no formal process for submitting resource requests, and, quote, therefore there was no standard response concerning approvals or denials of such requests from U.S. Secret Service headquarters, unquote. Well, let me skip down now. There's some other fine details about the report. And let me see now. The report also addressed the announcement this week that six Secret Service personnel were suspended following an internal investigation into the Butler shooting response. However, the Senate Committee's investigation found that the security room agent at Butler was not among those disciplined. And one of the criticisms here is that he failed to relay critical information he obtained from the Pennsylvania State Police officer stationed in the Secret Service's command post, quote, regarding a suspicious individual with a rangefinder to the Secret Service agents who could have removed or prevented President Trump from taking the stage. In a statement provided to CBS News, U.S. Secret Service Director Sean Curran said that his agency had received the report and will continue, this is in quotes, will continue to work cooperatively with the committee as we move forward in our mission. And I don't see it here. Somewhere in one of these articles, it does say that the person with that rangefinder that the state trooper talked about was Crooks, the man who attempted to assassinate the president. Well, we have some other things here, but in the interest of time, I'll just read you a few of the headlines. From the Washington Times, we had a year after the assassination attempt, Secret Service discipline is far too weak, Senate report says. So basically they are criticizing these suspensions, saying that they were far too small when you have almost the killing of a president. And again, that one, if you'd like to read it in full, is by Lindsay McPherson from the Washington Times, Sunday, July 13th. You notice a lot of these articles were on July 13th because that was the anniversary date of the attempted assassination. And let's see now. I'll just read a sentence or two. Thomas Matthew Crooks, the 20-year-old gunman, quote, was able to evade detection by the country's top protective agency for nearly 45 minutes, unquote, because of limited coordination among security partners, line-of-sight vulnerabilities that were flagged and not addressed, and other failures, the report said. No one at the Secret Service was fired. Another article also appeared that same day, Sunday, July 13th, was by Rebecca Santana. This one from the Washington Times. 1 year after Trump assassination attempt, changes the Secret Service, but questions remain. And I'll just read you the introductory paragraph here. In many ways, the assassination attempt against Donald Trump at a Pennsylvania campaign stop was a perfect storm of failings coming together that allowed 20-year-old Michael Thomas Crooks to climb on top of a nearby building and take 8 shots at the once and future president. And it gives a little summary of what we've already read there. As more details emerge about what went wrong, questions multiply. What happened to Secret Service's planning? Why was a rooftop with a clear line of sight to Trump left unguarded? What motivated the shooter? And, of course, there was another incident, not nearly as famous because no shots were fired, but in the next September, just a few months later, a gunman camped in the shrubbery outside one of Trump's golf courses before being spotted and shot at by a Secret Service agent. That also raises questions about the agency's performance. And let me see if there are other items that are worth reading here. It says the building with a clear sight line to the stage where the president was speaking, only 135 meters or 157 yards away, was left unguarded. Crooks eventually boosted himself up there and got off his 8 shots with an AR-style rifle. Let's see now. Secret Service's investigation into its own agency's conduct says that it wasn't that the line of sight risks weren't known about ahead of time. It was that multiple personnel assessed them as acceptable. Well, if you're like me, that doesn't seem very true. And this is a good article. If you get a chance, you might want to go to the internet and download it, or at least read it. Maybe even print it out. Secret Service issued a report Thursday. That would have been, let's see now, July 10th, I believe, of this year. Concerning what the Secret Service has done to address the problems laid bare at Butler. Well, there's some other good points here, but I see that our time is drawing to a close. And I heard on the radio today that they were going to have more drones. In fact, they have more drones now. Drones might have spotted this guy. In fact, they almost certainly would have spotted the guy. He was out in plain sight. I think some people in the rally audience saw him. Some of them, I think, saw him with a gun. So it's astounding that no one in the Secret Service seems to have seen him. Were they not looking up? Just what did go on? I don't know. That, again, that article was from the Washington Times by Rebecca Santana, Sunday, July 13th. And there's a longer article, runs to about 11 pages, not counting pictures, from CBS News, The Secret Double Life of Thomas Crooks, Trump's would-be assassin. I didn't get into this because I haven't had time to read it all. This was published July 11th, 2025. Again, CBS News. Well, our time is up. I want to thank you all for listening to The Divided Kingdom. You can write to me. We'd appreciate a few contributions. The address, Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week. Good night.